I want to ask you a question this morning. How expectant are you? How expectant are you? Are you believing God for a miracle this morning, or have you just rocked up to church? I'll be honest with you, there's times that I almost just rock up to church on a Sunday morning, but have you come expecting for more, for miracles, for something to happen in this place, for yourself? Have you come expecting something to happen? Have you come expecting something to happen for your friends and for your neighbors? Can I tell you a few things about being expectant? When you're expectant, it's very hard to hide it. When Lorna was expectant, I can say this because you have taken my wife out of church this morning, so I can say whatever I want, because I know you'll not grasp me up. When Lorna was expectant, there was a bump that started to appear. And it started to grow bigger and bigger. Then there was morning sickness. Then there was cravings for strange things like cream eggs and broccoli together, or liver and cheesecake. Odd cravings for things. It's hard to hide it when you're expectant. And people who are expectant have something about themselves that's hard to hide. They're passionate for God. To be honest with you, people who are expectant for more of God, sometimes they really annoy us because they're a bit crazy. They're out there. They're passionate for His presence. They're hungry for more of God. Often they're turned off by what the world has to offer. And I guess there's a whole sermon in there, but I'm not going there this morning. You know, the second thing about being expectant is this. When you're expectant, it affects your walk. When Lorna was expectant, Lorna became someone that was half woman, half duck. She walked with a bit of a waddle. It changed her walk physically, but it changed her walk in terms of her life as well, because when she was expectant, that seemed to be all we talked about. It was all we planned for. It was all we thought about. It became our life. Everything revolved around the expectancy, not the other way around. We didn't turn around and say, we'll fit everything in to our work schedule and to what's going on in life and our entertainment and everything else. The expectancy dictated everything, not the other way around. And it seems to me a little bit about myself and about society and maybe even about us as a church that sometimes we are expecting God to move, aren't we? But we want God to move in a way that fits in with our families, with our friends, with our work schedule, with all of our pre-planned engagements and everything else. And it seems to me at times that once we've ticked all of these requirements, then the time that's left, God, you can move in that space. You can move in those finances. You can move in that commitment. I don't think God's a God who just fits in. From what I read in the Bible, God's a God who breaks out of molds, not fits in them. And I think if we are expecting God to move, it's going to result in some radical changes to all of our lifestyles, all of our commitments, and everything that we do. But I have a bit of news for you this morning. Because whether you are expectant or not, it doesn't stop God from moving. I believe with all my heart, the exceptional desire, exceptional passion usually results in exceptional results, amazing results. But if you are not expectant for God to move this morning, God can still move, because God is not bounded by your emotions, by your feelings, by where you're at. God will do what He wants to do. And I want to share for you today another story from John's Gospel. It's one of my favorite stories from John's Gospel, and it's about a man. This is what it says in John chapter 5, reading from verse 1 out of the New King James Version of the Bible. It says this, it says, "After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the Sheep Gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for a moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well of whatever disease he had. Now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been in that condition for a long time, he said to him, 'Do you want to be made well?' The sick man answered him, 'Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I am still coming, another steps down before me.' And Jesus said to him, 'Rise, take up your bed and walk.' And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked, and that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him who was cured, 'Is it not the Sabbath? Is it not lawful? It's not lawful for you to carry your beds.' He answered them, 'He who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk.' Then they asked him, 'Who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk?' But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn. A multitude being in that place. Afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, 'See, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you.' The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who made him well." The story gives me hope, and it gives me, it really stirs something within me, because this man was not expectant for God to move. In fact, when you read the story, this man has no faith that we know of. He wasn't going out that day thinking, "I'm going to get healed, that Jesus is coming to me." There was no confession. There was no evident belief. It just seems to be a completely random act of mercy on God's part. I think it's really interesting that Bethesda, the pool where he was healed, literally means house of mercy. And that man received mercy there. I think that that's what our church should be called. House of mercy. Not just house of mercy, because that man came looking for mercy, but he received more than mercy because Jesus poured out grace upon him. And grace is so much more abundant than just mercy. Church should be a place where people seek mercy but walk away with grace. I don't know if you've noticed so far, as we've looked at three, today will be the third miraculous encounter in John's Gospel, that Jesus doesn't actually seem to come across as gentle Jesus, meek and mild. He says some pretty harsh things to people who seem to be desperate. Remember the story that Pastor Peter spoke to you about Jesus turning the water into wine? And it says in John 2, verse 4, that Jesus said this to Mary at the turning of the water into wine. He says, he said, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." I knew what would have happened if I had turned around to my mom and she had said to me, "Can you make the dinner?" And I said, "Woman, what has that got to do with you?" I could hazard a guess that I may not have been standing here alive today if I said that to my mom. The story of the nobleman that I preached on a few weeks ago. And the man comes to him because his son was on the brink of death. And he turns around and Jesus says to the nobleman, he says, unless you people see signs and wonders, you will by no means believe. Jesus seems to come across as so harsh. But Jesus, I think, uses these statements so that people stop and think. They think about Jesus, who he is. They think about themselves and their own situation. And they start to realize that things are maybe different than the way they thought. You see, I think that Jesus is as much about changing mindsets as he is about physical healing. And I think changing the mindset is a hard, hard thing to do. Because we have all our pre-programmed mindsets about what should happen, what shouldn't happen, what God should do, what he shouldn't do. And I think that's why Paul talks and says that the mind is a battlefield. And there's strongholds in the minds that need to be pulled down. Because our minds need to be adjusted sometimes to allow God to work. Jesus said this harsh thing to Mary, so that she would acknowledge that her son was also the Son of God. He said the harsh thing to the nobleman so that he would look beyond the miracles to the miracle worker. And he says a harsh thing to a disabled man sitting 38 years at the side of a pool. Jesus turns round and says one of the most craziest statements. He says, would you like to get well? Of course he would like to get well. He's been there 38 years. Why did Jesus say, after 38 years to this man, would you like to be made well? Why did he say it? Because he was the God of all creation. He knew what he thought anyway. He knew what his attitude was. He knew his desperation. I think Jesus said it because Jesus wanted the man to think about himself. Because so often our response to Jesus is dictated by the way we think, by the way we feel, by the context and the environment that we've lived in and we've come from, and that dictates our response and our thoughts to Jesus. What's your context tonight or today? Your upbringing, your family, the people around you, the friendship circles you mix in. Your own preconceived ideas. How much do those things shape you and hold you where you're at? Do you want to be healed today? Do you want a breakthrough in your family? Do you want a breakthrough in your mental state? Do you want a breakthrough in your finances? Do you really want a miracle today? Because you see, this man's context, this man's environment, became an environment of excuses. He basically says to Jesus, when Jesus says to him, do you want to be healed? He says, Jesus, it's not my fault. I've sat here 38 years, Jesus. I've sat here by the pool and obviously the angel has come down and he has stirred the water and there's lots of debate about what that means and what that is, but I don't want to go into that today. But he sat there at the side of the pool for 38 years and God somehow stirs up the water and he says, but no one has ever been here to lift me into the pool. I can't get into the pool. I've got an excuse, Jesus. Every time a breakthrough is about to happen, I can't get there. Can you imagine what this man must have felt? Maybe when he was there for the first couple of years, he thought, maybe I can make a plan. Maybe I can sort something out. Maybe after 10 years, he was thinking, maybe there's still a chance that someone will help me. By years 20 and 30, he had resigned himself to thinking, I'm just stuck here. I'm camping out at the side of Miss Pool. This is my life. This is how it is always going to be. And isn't that the same with us sometimes? Maybe there's things that we have been battling. Maybe there's issues in our life. Maybe there's issues that we need healing from and deliverance from and be set free from. But you know what? We've been living with it for 5, 10, 15, 30, looking at some of you, 105 years. We've been living with it for so long. You know what? We've just become used to it. You know what? Sometimes we can believe God for a miracle for other people, but we can't believe it for ourselves. I've just had it so long. And you know what? It's just become part of me. And I think that's the place that that man had come to. That man had sat at the side of that pool. And that man had lived with disappointment after disappointment after disappointment as that water had stirred up. And you know, when you live for disappointment that long, it's easier just not to expect anything, isn't it? It's easier just not to expect it. Maybe you've been disappointed. Maybe you have been really disappointed in people. Maybe you've been really disappointed in answers to prayer. Maybe you've been disappointed in God, and to be honest with you, most of us have been disappointed in God at some stage in our life. But that doesn't mean to say that God's not still able. It doesn't mean to say that God's not still able. You know, this man's context was not just a context of blaming someone else. It was a context, in some ways, of lack of effort. I can't help but think about the man. If I was waiting in an angel to come and stir up the water, and say the pool was here, do you know where I would sit? I would sit here right on the edge. Because I would think if nothing else could just fall in. But it seems to me from the context of this story that this man was sitting quite a distance away because he was expecting someone to come and carry him into the water. And I don't know why he had done that. In fact, the man's context seems to be that he had sat there for so long that now he had got a bed sitting at the side of the pool. He probably had some snacks. He probably was sitting there with everything he needed. It had almost become home from home for him. People can become really settled in the most uncomfortable places. Do you know, if you put your head down to sleep at night and you haven't got anything for a pillow but a rock, if you lie on it long enough, your head will become used to it. If you have a stone in your shoe and you walk on it long enough, you won't feel it anymore. We become used to the most uncomfortable situations. And this man had just become used to it. He made himself comfortable where he was. His context was a context of letting, of a lack of effort out of the King James Version of the Bible, is because the word that's used here is the word infirmity. In the Greek, actually the word for disability or sickness is a far, far stronger word. This is a milder complaint. It is a milder thing that's wrong with him. It was a weakness. I'm not decrying his illness, but this man was letting his illness define him. And that's easy to do. Can I just share with you a couple of people in church this morning? Rose Jepson. Most of you, do you all know Rose? Rose is like the grandmother of this church. I call her the Queen Mum. Rose is what age is she, Sheila? She's 88 years old. Really tired, weary, is that right, Rose? She's got lots of medical complaints with her, but she's just exhausted, pretty much. Do you know what Rose does? Rose doesn't let her illness define her. Rose prays. I can guarantee you today, if you know Rose Jepson, Rose Jepson has prayed for you this week. I can guarantee that. I know for many people in this congregation, at 88 years old, they still phone her and ask her for counsel and advice. I know that many times when Rose is absolutely exhausted, she's still talking on the phone to people, praying over the phone to them. I was at her house the other week. I don't think she writes them. I think Sheila writes them for her now. But she had cards ready to post out to people in our congregation to encourage them that Sheila had written for her. 88 years old. And her sickness has not defined her. I think of people like Irene. Irene coming to me and saying to me, you know, Irene's been struggling with her legs, hasn't she? She's been struggling with Leonard as well, but the rest of us have as well. But she's been struggling with her legs. And you know, Irene said to me a few Sundays ago, maybe it was before Christmas, she says, my legs are really, really bad, but I don't want to miss church. I won't be miss church. She didn't let her illness define her. What about Wilshie sitting down the end? I remember the day. I remember the day when we nearly carried her into the baptismal tank to baptize her. Isn't that right? Because she doesn't let her illness define her. There are too many people today and they let their illness define them. They let their illness dictate who they are. But you are not your illness. You are a child of God. If you believe in him, you are a child of the King. You can't let your illness define you. 38 years, and I'm not saying it's not easy, or it is easy, it's difficult. 38 years of not seeing God move. And it's easy to let it define you. You know what challenged me a few years ago when I went out to Romania? And they took us to one of the Romanian orphanages, and the children are all grown up now, they're adults, but we were just listening to the context of the Romanian orphanages, and basically what they said, there's no, I know we complain about our mental health institutions here in the UK, but it's nothing compared to out there. And basically, if you had anything, you had depression, you were psychotic, you were bipolar, you were whatever it was, you were just dumped all in the same place. Even if you were considered to be a little bit slow at school, you were dumped in the same place. And do you know what happens? Everybody's dumped in the same place, so everybody ends up becoming the same. So someone who had nothing wrong with them became as severe as the most mentally ill that were there. And it almost leveled everybody up at the worst place. Do you know why I share that example? Because sometimes your friends will dictate where you're at. The people you spend time with will dictate where you're at. I know that it seems to be in the UK at the minute that depression is in the rise, and there's probably lots and lots of reasons for that. And I am not decrying depression. Please do not. We have experienced it in our family, and depression is an awful, awful illness to have. But sometimes when you're depressed, the worst thing to do is hang about with other depressed people. They'll make you more blinking depressed. Do you know what I mean? You need to move in a circle that lifts your spirits. See the worst circle for you to mix in church? People that are critical. When you start mixing a circle of people who are critical, criticize everything there is about the church, you know what you'll end up doing? People that are judgmental, stay away from them. Don't sit in the same seat as them. Don't sit in the same row as them. Move, not now. But don't go near them. You know those negative emotions, those negative things in people's lives, and they are not healthy to be around. You know, my pastor used to tell me, and it's not very politically correct now, I know this, and people in church don't want to hear this, but he used to talk to me, and he used to say to me, don't go out with people that don't know God, because you know what? And he used to use the illustration of standing on top of a chair. Anybody else heard that illustration? He says, when someone's standing on the top of a chair, and you're going out with someone who's not a Christian, it's easier for them to pull you down than it is for you to pull them up. And it is so true about everything in life. You mix with people who are not godly, who are not demonstrating the fruit of the Spirit. Do you know what? They will pull you down to their level rather than you ever pull them up. Do you know what you should do? You should find out who the most passionate nutcase is in Silverdale Elam. And you should all go and sit beside them. Because a little bit of passion rubbing off on you is not a bad thing. Don't let your illness define you. We're sitting at the side of the pool, and do you know who was all around him? Sick people. Sick people. And the people around him started to define who he was. Lord, I hope that's a word from you. years sitting beside a pool and nothing changed. Some of you have things in your life that haven't changed for years and years. I know that there are people here and you have really unhappy marriages and it hasn't changed. I know there's people here who've got broken families. I know there are people here who have been struggling from week to week with money. Lord, speak, your servant's listening. I know that there's some of you who have been dealing with prodigal children. And some of you have been dealing with sickness issues for years and years and years, and it hasn't changed. And some of you have become very good at putting a face on when it comes to church, but you feel as if, I can't take this much longer. I want to tell you today that our God's still the God of the breakthrough. And whether you're expecting God to move or not this morning, God can and God does move. I think the Bible says that you have faith the size of a mustard seed for a reason. You don't need an awful lot of it. If you have faith just to move at all, God will take the bigger step towards you. Do you know what Jesus does? Jesus challenges this man. He challenges him to get up and to step out. It just seemed to be that this day was the day for Jesus to say crazy things. First of all, he asks him, do you really want to be healed? And then he turns around to a man who's been paralyzed for 38 years. He says, rise, take up your beds and walk. Jesus says, first of all, he says, what you need to do is you need to change your mindset. Changing your mindset is so important. Changing the way we think is so important. Once you've changed your mindset, then you can change your position. You can't change your position until you change your mindset. So change your mindset first, then your position can change. And he says this to him. He says, today is your day for a miracle. Get up and walk. Do you know, there's people who really frustrate me at times. Someday when we get to heaven, I'm going to tell you all who you are. Because I think there'll be more grace there. But it really frustrates me when people turn around and say, Pastor, I don't need to come out for prayer. Jesus can meet me where I'm at. And you know what? There's a certain amount of truth in that. Jesus can meet you where you're at. But I'll tell you what, if that is going to be your prideful, arrogant response, I don't see why he would meet you where you're at. And to be perfectly honest, I think what you're saying is a lot of nonsense, a lot of rubbish. Everywhere I have read in the Bible that Jesus asks people to respond by taking some sort of step of faith. And he meets them after they have taken some sort of step of faith. You ever thought how crazy it must have been for Naaman in the Old Testament? Remember Naaman, the royal official, the king of, or the top army soldier, and he goes to Elisha, and Elisha was the enemy of Israel, or Naaman was the enemy of Israel, and he goes to Elisha, who was a prophet of Israel, and Elisha turns around and says to him, he's got leprosy, and he says to him, if you want to be cured of your leprosy, go and dip yourself in the River Jordan 7 times. I've been to the River Jordan, and it's not the cleanest of places. It's not the cleanest of places. And Naaman's response was, why do I have to go there? There's better rivers I've got back home. There's cleaner baths I've got back home. But God challenges him through Elisha and says, no, this is what you have to do. Because coming forward for prayer during the service, I'll tell you now, there's absolutely nothing special about me. Nothing special about me. There's absolutely nothing special about the oil that we have in this little bottle. We just bought it at the car repair shop. It's just engine oil. It's just olive oil. There's nothing special, but it's not consecrated. It's not holy. There's nothing special about our prayers. I guarantee you, when people come out for prayer, I guarantee you there'll be different people will pray for people in different ways. There's not a formula or a magical formula for praying. But coming forward for prayer does 3 things, I believe. First of all, it physically moves you from where you are to where you should be. That's what it does. It's a physical statement. And you know what? Sometimes physical statements actually say something to the brain as well. Brain, I'm not going to stay stuck here anymore. I'm going to move from where I am to where I want to be. The second thing is this. It's a sign of humility. It's not saying, I'm going to sit welded to my chair because God, you come and bless me if you dare. Saying to God, you know what, God, I've got problems that I can't fix. I'm prepared to take a risk, God. I'm prepared to take a step of faith. I'm prepared to walk and see if you come and meet with me. And that's the final thing. It is by physically walking from your seat to where you're being prayed for. It is a physical step of faith. It's a step that's saying, I'm going to believe in God. I'm going to believe in God. I don't know if that man could have stood. I really don't know. But Jesus says to him, get up. Get up. I would say after 38 years sitting at the side of a pool, sitting on the cold, hard floor, there wouldn't be much strength left in your legs anyway. The muscles would probably have deteriorated. But it wasn't just the challenge of getting up. Because Jesus said for him to do something else. He says, get up and take up your bed. Don't leave yourself a place to go back to. It's easy to have the place of comfort to go back to again. You know, sometimes I meet people and I've met people and even in church and they've suffered with depression and suffered with anxiety and you know what? The place they go back to is the place they go back to is the place of the bottle. Have a drink. A drink makes it all better. Some people I've met even go back to smoking a little bit of weed, a little bit of pot. Takes the pressure off, relieves it. Do you know what? If you're believing God for a healing, I think you need to believe God for a healing and just dump all that stuff. I'll tell you now, if you've got a problem with alcohol, and again, this may not be politically correct, but I don't care. If you've got a problem with alcohol, you should not have it in your house. You should not have it in your house. Because it will pull you down rather than you pull it up. You will not control it. You will not control it. It'll control you. So get rid of those things. Get rid of those things that are the comfort blankets. And I am not telling you, and please hear me say this morning, I am not telling you if you're on medication to stop taking medication. If you do that, you're an idiot. Unless you have talked to the doctor, unless you have got approval off the doctor, do not come off your medication. Am I clear on that? Because we are here to operate wisdom as well. But sometimes there is a place to say, God, our doctor, do you know what? I believe that God's healed me. Can we try this? Sometimes there is a place for that. But do it under medical supervision. I don't know, many times I've heard of people, and Pastor Williams shared a story with me a while ago of someone who had a complaint with them, and they were going for an operation, and in the morning of the operation, they just turned around and said to the doctor, Doctor, can you please send me for another x-ray before I go because I believe that God has healed me? And they went for the x-ray, and God had completely healed them. That's a wise step of faith, isn't it? A wise step of faith. I'm coming into land now. I'm coming in to finish. And some of you are saying, praise God, praise God. I just want to say really briefly that this story is not just a story about a man being healed. And the story of the man and him battling against his mindset and his culture and his surroundings and his context and all of that there. It's not just about that. It's also a story about religious people. Boy, do I hate religious people. They just do my head in. And these religious people were more concerned about the man carrying his blow-up mattress home. Well, I don't know whether it's blow up or not, but he's more concerned about him carrying his mattress home than the fact that he was healed. Crazy, isn't it? It's crazy what religion does. It's crazy because our default position as people is that we like rules rather than grace. And then we try and impose those rules on other people. We need to be people who are grace-filled. But you know what Jesus does? After all this dispute goes on with these religious people, Jesus meets the man again. And he turns around and he says to him, go and sin no more in case something worse happens to you. I don't know about you. Maybe you're a lot better person than me. That wouldn't be particularly hard. But I've tried the go and sin no more approach. And do you know what I end up doing? No, I don't end up sinning because I'm a godly person. Yeah, I do. I do. When I try and be good, it doesn't end up working out that well. When I try and be better, doesn't try and end up working out that well. And I think this story really ends on a note of grace as well. Because he says, go and sin no more. And that's the healing for all of us that we all need. We all need to be set free from our sin, don't we? We all need to be set free from those things and the shame in our life and the things that have tied us down. But I know as well as you know that I will never be set free from my sin by just trying to be a decent, good person. Because I mess up. The only way that I can be set free from my sin is coming to the cross of Jesus Christ and asking for his forgiveness. There was only one perfect man that ever walked the face of this earth. And they hung him on the cross. Thank God he hung him on a cross because he died for me and you, that we could be free. So I want to ask you a question today. Have you come to the place of mercy this morning? And if you have come to the place of mercy, I'm going to ask you, why don't you just accept his grace? His lavish grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. We're going to pray. I'm going to ask you this morning, if you, I know it's gone on a little bit this morning, but if you are here this morning and you do need God to move in your life, I'm going to ask Mark and some of the street team to come out, and if any of the elders are here as well, just to come out and just to pray with people. If you need God to move in your life, if you need a healing, if you need a breakthrough, if you want to come and stand and proxy for someone, that's okay as well, because God heals at a distance. And sometimes that step of faith needs to be done on someone's behalf. We will read in a few weeks' time about the man who broke through the roof and lowered the man down at Jesus' feet. It was their faith that caused that man to be healed. And you could do that this morning. So come this morning. I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask the worship team to come forward. I'm going to ask them maybe to pray, play No Longer Slaves to Fear. And then if you need prayer, you can come forward. After they've played this song, if you need to go, you can go after we've sung this song. But if anybody needs ministry and prayer, then please keep coming and receive from God this morning. Is that okay? Let's pray.